Join the Colorado Ag News Network and Farmcast Radio once again this month is Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. We've got a lot to talk about this month. Welcome back inside the barn, Jerry, and want to ask you, first of all, you know, wheat harvest is wrapping up across the state, and it's been, for the most part, just like everything else in 2020, a complete mess. We've had persistent drought when the rains come. We've also had producers experiencing devastating hail and high winds. Not to mention, if you were faced with that very small insect that actually thinks they're lumberjack wannabes and clear cuts wheat fields, the stem sawfly. Yields have been atrocious for many producers. They've got low test weights, the protein levels are up, and even some of the elevators are telling them they're not going to take it if it has such low test weight. So I guess, remind me again, Senator Sonnenberg, why are we farming and ranching once again?
You know, that's a very good question, Brian. It's always good to talk with you. It truly has. 2020 has been a challenge for everybody, including agriculture. We can talk about livestock later, but as you talk about grains and wheat harvest, the weather this year, we've been in an extreme drought. When we have rainstorms, we get them 2 and 3 inches at a time with lots of hail. I will bet you that probably in eastern Logan County where I am, I'll bet we cut less than 10% of the wheat. 90% of the wheat was hailed out in that storm in June that took down the Akron elevator, took down the New Haven elevator. So that's been a challenge, and we just keep coming back and doing it year after year after year. Us eternal optimists going, well, next year will be better, and who knows, maybe the price will go up with the shortage, but it never seems to work out. And if the price goes up, I can assure you in my marketing plan, if the price goes up, that means I don't have anything to sell.
You know, you say eternal optimist. I say glutton for punishment is what we are. Speaking of those hail and high wind storms that you talked about a couple months ago, the USDA disaster declaration was declared for 11 Colorado counties due to hail and high winds. You can check out more about that online inside the barn. So the USDA is trying to help, but it's taken a while to get emergency declarations in some regards, and we're still waiting to see. I know quite a few ag organizations sent in letters to request they open up CRP for emergency hay and grazing. That has to do with not just the drought situation, but the COVID situation, the meatpacking problem.
Let me talk about that. I've had conversations with Clarice Navarro, the director here in Colorado, back in early July, how important it was in the heat of this drought. We have young people in the cattle business that cannot feed their animals, that they're going to have to sell their animals. I was trying to see what we could get accomplished to get emergency grazing or haying on the CRP. And the rules are such with the new farm bill that you have to be a D2, that's a drought, second level drought, for 8 weeks in a row before they will allow you to hay or graze that without penalty. There were a number of them that were going to try and pay the 25% penalty on the payments to try and have access to it, but I had trouble getting any movement on getting emergency hay, and that's frustrating. So we've got to revisit that in times like this where we have an emergency. And then the other thing was absolutely nothing before July 16th because of the bird nesting. The nesting has to be complete, and the eggs hatched, because that was the primary purpose, evidently, of CRP, was for that wildlife habitat. So that was frustrating, but still working to try and come up with other ways to help those young and beginning farmers that have cattle now that are struggling. Because you know as well as I do, if your grass doesn't grow in spring, even with the rain now, it's so hot, that grass won't flourish. You're just preparing moisture profile for next year.
In regards to a company that I really hate to say their name, but I'm going to get the intro out of the way, Burger King had a video that was online on social media, and you wrote a great op-ed about that.
Well, thank you. And yes, they actually had it on TV, and that's what prompted the op-ed. I saw it online and became frustrated, and as I'm doing my work here, I popped, look up on TV on that evening, and there it was on TV as well. And so that's when I decided Burger King does not understand, nor do most of the businesses and consumers understand how agriculture takes care of its land, how agriculture takes care of its animals, and how agriculture takes care of the environment. And so I thought it was important to explain how they have misrepresented global emissions from cattle, how they have signed off on a deal with the devil. And quite honestly, it's not just them. I have been frustrated with Burger King over the Impossible Burger, although if there's a market for them, great. But to argue that that chemically-based fake meat is the new tomorrow, I think was an overreach. If you want to provide a product, that's great, but you can't trash the other traditional items from my perspective and expect me to continue to do business with you. It's no different than a couple of years ago, McDonald's did a stunt, I would call, where they went and advertised, we're no longer going to buy any beef that has had antibiotics in it. Now, obviously, the science there is such where we know that the antibiotics given to animals does not translate to antibiotic resistance in humans. But yet, McDonald's came out in a stunt to try and increase their marketplace, just like Burger King, in which it looks like they would rather see animals die as opposed to have us farmers and ranchers take care of sick animals. If an animal gets sick, and yes, animals get sick just like humans. They use antibiotics just like humans. And then the fascinating part was our governor, even during one of his COVID briefings, took shots at agriculture with regard to antibiotics use in animals, and he was spewing out facts that were indeed not true. One of the ones he said is, we don't give humans antibiotics when they're healthy. And the fact is, we absolutely do. I can tell you, I personally have to take antibiotics before I go to a dentist because I have a prosthesis. It just shows a lack of understanding on what the public knows, and then our leaders give misinformation to spew the public, and that's part of my frustration with Polis as well as all of these businesses that seem to think they know how to take care of the land and agriculture better than the farmers and ranchers that have been doing it for years. There's a reason that we do things better now than we did 100 years ago, and that's because farmers and ranchers are the ultimate environmentalists.
I think history's on agriculture's side, by the way, as you just mentioned. You can check out Jerry Sonnenberg's op-ed, both in written and audio form, online inside the barn. And you know, I think because your op-ed went viral, and also some work that Farm Babe did, and AgriTalk just recently did an interview with Frank Mitloner, University of California, Davis Air Quality Extension Specialist. He's at the Department of Animal Sciences, and he said when he spoke with Burger King, he educated them on the facts, and they made several changes. They took the content out that was demeaning to farmers. Then they even pulled the content from all television stations. The company also mentioned and asked Mitloner to work with them moving forward. And he said, they have asked me to cooperate with them in order to infuse science-based research on the one hand and get communication out and check it before it reaches the masses. So maybe they have learned something from this situation on that methane deal. The entire interview from AgriTalk is online at agweb.com/agritalk. But hey, maybe all the pressure from your op-ed and Farm Babe and AgriTalk has helped, and Dr. Mitloner too.
Well, there was a lot of us in the agriculture industry, specifically in the livestock industry, that saw all of the flaws that were part of the Burger King message. From my perspective, I've got to fight back harder. People that don't understand, I've got to do a better job of trying to teach them, educate them, so that they are not on this radical movement to use misinformation to change people's habits.
Once again, my guest, Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. You can check out his op-ed from this week online at the Bourne once again. Wanted to move on here. Governor Polis continued the emergency declaration recently. Now we're, what, into August? I don't even know what the day is, 15th or something like that. And then he's also done some more in the CARES Act fund spending. Want to get your thoughts on that, but keep this in mind, Jerry. Oklahoma Department of Agriculture this week just announced they're going to use $10 million that's available through the CARES Act funding they're getting to help with the food supply stability plan for that state's meat processors. Boy, that sounds like a very novel approach to using some money they're getting to help that food supply chain issue in the state of Oklahoma. Why can't we get something like that and a recommendation out of that from the Colorado Department of Agriculture?
Well, and the truth is, Brian, that would be a great idea. You know, our processing plants for livestock have been hit hard by COVID. So what better place to put a little money to help with increasing the production to allow for maybe more spread out hours to do the processing, to increase that processing to try and get our food supply chain back in the normal process or in the normal chain of events. You know, we're still backed up. That's a great idea, and quite frankly, Oklahoma understands that. The problem with Colorado is we don't get it. The people of Colorado, leadership of Colorado, have this ultimate war on rural Colorado. And yes, I'm talking about our governor and the administration that really doesn't care about agriculture. I mentioned about the governor's when he's given COVID briefings, taking shots at agriculture. The Department of Ag doesn't seem to be helpful in a number of different issues. It looks like we may have labor issues coming up with agriculture that will hit that we need to have a discussion about that the Department of Ag is not being helpful with. We have things that we need to work on, but we're not getting the help, quite frankly, even the communication from those at the state level, and that becomes frustrating.
I hope you'll give us more information about the Department of Labor and the potential attack on labor and agriculture as we go forward. Speaking of the meat packing industry, on July 22nd, the USDA also released a report on its ongoing boxed beef and fed cattle price spread investigation. And Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue said the closure of the Tyson beef packing plant following that fire, if you remember, at the facility in Holcomb, Kansas back in September, and the current COVID-19 pandemic said clearly disrupted the markets and processing systems responsible for the production and sale of U.S. beef. The report also discusses several policy considerations, Jerry, in light of the desire by many market participants for improved price discovery, reinvigorated competition, and a more transparent relationship between the prices for live cattle and the resulting products. Now, that report did not examine potential violations of the Packers and Stockyards Act. However, the USDA staff maintained a cooperative relationship with the Department of Justice Antitrust Division staff will take place, and they discussed allegations of anti-competitive practices in the meatpacking industry. And should the USDA find a violation of the Packers and Stockyards Act, they say they're authorized to report the violation to the Department of Justice for prosecution. So,
you know, that's challenging for all of us. And if they prosecute for price fixing or things like that during this process, and heavy fines are levied, you know, it's a double-edged sword. We know there may be a problem, but we're going to end up having to pay for it because when those fines are paid, they come out of what the producers send them, the profits producers or the prices producers get on these cattle. It's a tough situation, and we have kind of created this. Agriculture is to blame, at least to some degree. The good thing about it is we have the ability to sell our beef on a regular basis and consistent basis. The frustrating part is they have gotten big and consolidated the market so much that we don't have any other opportunities for to figure out what the actual market is. We saw that during both the fire back in August, the disruption there, and the COVID situation this spring. where markets become disrupted, the price for live cattle goes down, but yet boxed meat or the finished product goes up. I saw a deal just the other day where the price of boxed meat went up, or the price of meat in the grocery store went up. I don't remember, something like 20%, and the price to the producer went down by about the same margin. So it's challenging. We've got to figure this out. I can tell you there's a number of things that I would like to see done. There's been some pushback from allowing smaller producers or smaller packers to get involved, but I think that is a good solution to give an opportunity for those smaller folks to be able to sell meat, not have the huge restrictions it takes that we have utilized to create the monopoly we have. And we'll see how that works. You know, currently right now, I can sell beef to my neighbor, but I can't sell beef to a grocery store or something like that. So we need to look at those options as well.
You bet. You can check out the USDA's ongoing box beef and fed cattle price spread investigation report that came out yesterday, July 22nd, online inside the barn, and see some graphs and charts in there, too, that'll pretty much shed some light on that. Once again, my guest, Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg, wanted to move on and get your thoughts and reactions to Governor Polis's mandatory mask order. And is it constitutional?
Hey, it's interesting with the new mask order. The governor said the day before he issued it that he was not going to issue a statewide mask order and then allow the counties to do what they needed to do to manage their own, which we have been advocating for. So it appears Douglas County is one of the most populous counties and said, no, we're not going to mandate that. We're going to relieve the mandates on the mask order. Well, I guess it only the counties can only make their own decisions if they're the decisions that the governor wants them to make. Because as soon as the governor hears that, then he comes out and says, you know, on second thought, if the counties are going to make that decision, I'm going to make a better decision for him, or at least what he perceives as a better decision than issue a statewide mandate. And then just a couple of days ago, comes out and says, we're also going to close bars down now at 10 o'clock, as if COVID is more prevalent after 10 o'clock than before 10 o'clock. So, you know, from my perspective, this just looks like a power play. And the more I see the information and how our governor has made decisions has become more frustrating and quite frankly, more detrimental to the state. Some businesses are allowed to do more than other businesses. We've allowed the big box stores to be open. We've shut down oil and gas industry. All sorts of different things have happened with this governor that has become frustrating. And quite frankly, those in rural counties, I think, are now starting to, and even some of the urban areas are starting to go, you know, the governor is just kind of off his rocker. Just whatever, you know, how when someone turns around and says, oh, whatever, and it goes on and do their own thing anyhow, I think you will see more of that.
Once again, my guest, Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. You know, we've maybe talked about this in the past, and I know it was just recently signed a couple of weeks ago, but that cage-free by 2025 bill, which is now law, seems to me like that's a slippery slope, Senator. What's the next domino to fall in regarding to agriculture? Might it be feedlots, livestock production, crop farming? You mentioned earlier the Department of Labor and the Department of Ag working together on something to go after labor and agriculture.
Well, and the truth is, we don't know what the next domino. We do know their tactic is divide and conquer. We saw them divide the pork industry out several years ago. We are seeing them divide the egg industry out, the chicken industry out in the most latest bill. And the frustrating part of that is how it was done. You know, the industry tells me that they are, that the consumers want us to go to cage-free, to larger cages, those type of things. And I said, that's great. and do that. If the consumers want to do it, you don't need a bill to make that happen. The consumers are going to drive this. You're going to get larger cages, and they may pay a little more. That's fine. They wanted a little more time to get this accomplished. So they drafted a bill to remove the ballot initiative that was submitted for Colorado that did the same thing. There were only two differences between the ballot initiative and the bill itself. One was a major one. The minor one was the legislation allowed the egg producers more time than the ballot initiative to accomplish this cage-free, to change their infrastructure, to change their capital investment to be able to meet that need. The part that is so scary, the part that is frustrating, and the part that probably made this the worst bill passed in 2020 was that they created in the legislation an exclusive marketing contract with retailers in the state of Colorado. So, for example, King Soopers, Albertsons, all of those grocery stores will soon only be able to buy eggs from a company that carries the state of Colorado certification for cage size that these guys are the only ones can get. So you can't get eggs from out of state. You can't get eggs from somewhere else. The lawsuit, it's just like California. We actually filed lawsuit because this has to do with interstate commerce issues. Now we're going to have to back out of that lawsuit, and the other states are going to be suing us for the same reason, because they can't bring their product into Colorado. So what industry is next? What industry will we next allow the environmental organizations to come in, tell us how to do business, threaten us, and then settle with something such as this? The environmentalists didn't even want that. That wasn't part of their process on this exclusive contract. What is going to happen is it's going to make eggs more expensive and allow our retailers to only buy from certain egg producers here in Colorado. So if the consumer is actually wanting this, why do you need to put that in legislation? That's become the biggest challenge for me. And I don't know what happens next. Things of the beef industry.
Your thoughts, too, about the appointment of two animal rights extremists to the Colorado Veterinary Advisory Board? That comes from information from a Fence Post article written by Rachel Gable on June 10th.
You know, Senator Corum and I have been battling this for a couple of years, these appointments to commissions on a number of different fronts. You remember I did some stuff to try and explain that the Eastern Plains has been left out of much of these appointments, including groundwater commission, those type of things. And then we have political appointments where we have, for example, I think Parks and Wildlife has a number of members. You can't have over the majority. I'm trying to think if Parks and Wildlife has 11 appointed. Maybe I'm thinking of the State Fair Board. None of those can have more than one over half of one political party, which I understand, and I completely agree with. The party that's in power, the governor that's in charge, should be able to have one more from his party than the other party. But what this governor has done is he made all of these appointments political, so he's replacing Republicans with unaffiliated to make sure he stays, that he only has the same number of Democrats, but less Republicans. There are commissions now with only one or two Republicans, three, four, five unaffiliated, and then the six Democrats. Well, I get that. And then the unaffiliated, when they go through the process, and even the Democrats, for example, on the state fair, they wanted to appoint someone that the state veterinarian, a vegan activist to serve oversight on our veterinarians in the state of Colorado. That makes about as much sense as putting oil in your drinking water. So This has been a frustrating process over the last couple of years, and I've tried to shed light to it. It's often overlooked because the legislature rubber stamps the governor's appointments without battle. There have been very few that have been rejected. I cannot get my partners across the aisle to stand up and say, is this really the best choice that we have to fill this commission? We continue to have those battles. I'll continue to fight on a regular basis on this stuff. But yes, the Veterinarian Board, Parks and Wildlife, Groundwater Commission, all of those have become political because of this governor.
Any final thoughts before I let you go, or something we might have missed?
I was with my Colorado Agriculture Leadership Program for 3 days this past week, and it was good. We went to a robot dairy, a dairy that milks by robot that is just a fascinating new, it's not necessarily new, it's been an evolving technology. It was interesting. We also went and saw one of, toured some of Noble Energy's work that they're doing and how they are trying to be more energy efficient with less emissions, going to electric equipment to make this happen. And I saw the one rig that Noble still has left in the state. So I worry about oil and gas production. We have seen the Extraction filed bankruptcy, which was another large Colorado-based oil and gas company, filed bankruptcy in June. We have seen Whiting reduce its impact here. A number of companies we're seeing, even as oil prices start to increase, not being able to make it in Colorado and going some other places. That's a scary thought for us because they've helped fund schools through their property taxes. And if we do not have an oil and gas industry in this state, somewhere else our education is going to have to find funding. And we know it's not coming through a tax process because we have reduced taxes because of the pandemic. So there are a number of issues facing this state, and we need leadership in this state. We haven't seen that leadership over the past several months. We've got to figure out how to move forward. We have examples in other states. South Dakota is the first one that comes to mind on how things were done right, it appears, and we have a positive impact. If we could learn from those, or the rest of the country could learn from those type of experiences, know what we did wrong, what we can do better, and figure out how to make those adjustments, we need to do that. And I think that's important for us to move forward in Colorado.
I wanted to say thank you once again to my guest, Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. Really appreciate your time each and every month, Jerry, and appreciate your work that you do on behalf of all the citizens of the state as well at the Capitol, 24/7, 365 anymore.
And I appreciate that, Brian, and it truly is an honor to serve as not only a senator for the 21,000 square miles and the 11 counties that I represent, but as a senator as part of a rural team that actually represents all of rural Colorado, trying to be that advocate and spokesperson for all of Colorado. And it truly is an honor to be that voice.
Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg represents District 1 in the state and represents the counties of Cheyenne, Elbert, Lincoln, Logan, Kit Carson, Morgan, Phillips, Sedgwick, Yuma, Washington, and Weld. You can learn more online at electsonnenberg.com.